This morning, I made a bad joke about me not being able to do math. I was trying to add up all the trips around the city of Jericho that the Israelites were doing, and I made it like I didn't know what 6 plus 7 was. Well, Emma helped me. This morning, she gave me a piece of paper that says 6 plus 7 equals 13. So, Emma's always looking out for me. Romans 15 verse 4 tells us that whatever things were written before time are written for our learning, that through the perseverance and encouragement of the scriptures, we might have hope. Now what Paul was talking about in Romans 15 was the Old Testament. And I know that we're not living under that covenant, but there's a lot in that Old Testament that we can learn. And we made some applications from that, from an Old Testament book this morning in Joshua. This evening, we're going to be in another Old Testament book, this time 2 Chronicles chapter 18. 2 Chronicles 18. So turn there and let's begin reading about what I really think is an interesting story concerning King Jehoshaphat of Judah and King Ahab of the northern kingdom of Israel. You remember at this time, the kingdom had split. There was a northern kingdom and a southern kingdom. And among the kings of the northern kingdom, there was not a good king in the bunch. 19 of them. Every single one of them was rotten. There were some good kings in the southern kingdom. Jehoshaphat tried to be, but the problem with Jehoshaphat was that he had allied himself with some of Ahab's household. Now, if you know anything about King Ahab of the northern kingdom of Israel, the guy was a scoundrel, mostly due to the fact that he had married a woman who herself was as wicked as they come, Jezebel. In fact, her very name today is synonymous with an evil woman, right? Well, Jezebel was Ahab's wife, and as we'll find out later, Ahab and Jezebel were the in-laws of Jehoshaphat, the king of the southern kingdom. Read with me, 2 Chronicles 18, beginning in verse 1. It says, "Now Jehoshaphat had great riches and honor, and he allied himself by marriage with Ahab. Some years later, he went down to visit Ahab at Samaria. And Ahab slaughtered many sheep and oxen for him and the people who were with him, and induced him to go up against Ramoth Gilead. Ahab, king of Israel, said to Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, 'Will you go with me against Ramoth Gilead?' And he said to him, 'I am as you are, and my people is your people, and we will be with you in the battle.' Moreover, Jehoshaphat said to the king of Israel, 'Please inquire first for the word of Yahweh.' Then the king of Israel assembled the prophets, 400 men, and said to them, 'Shall we go against Ramoth Gilead to battle, or shall I refrain?' And they said, 'Go up, for God will give it into the hand of the king.' But Jehoshaphat said, 'Is there not yet a prophet of the Lord here that we may inquire of him?' The king of Israel said to Jehoshaphat, 'There is yet one man by whom we may inquire of the Lord, but I hate him. For he never prophesies good concerning me, but always evil. He is Micaiah, son of Imlah.' But Jehoshaphat said, 'Let not the king say so.'" So we'll stop there for now. Ahab wants Jehoshaphat to help him fight against Aram. That's where Ramoth Gilead is. Jehoshaphat says, "Okay, but let's make sure we clear it with God first. Let's clear it with Yahweh, with the Lord." So he says, "Are there any prophets here?" And Ahab says, "I got a bunch of prophets. 400 of them. And they all are a bunch of yes men. They tell Ahab, 'Oh, go up. God's going to be with you.'" Well, Jehoshaphat knows these guys aren't speaking for God. And so he says, "Isn't there yet still somebody with God's authority that we can let speak?" And of course, Ahab says, "Yeah, there's one, but I don't like him. He never says anything good about me." And no wonder, because Ahab was a wicked, evil guy, an idolater. And what happens is that they finally call in Micaiah. We won't go through this, the rest of chapter 18. They finally call in Micaiah, and Micaiah at first says, "Oh, go ahead, go up." And Ahab says, "Come on, tell me the truth." And Micaiah does. He says, "You'll be defeated if you go. It won't turn out well for you." And so Ahab says, "See, what did I tell you? He's always saying bad things about me." Well, they discount the truthful advice from Micaiah, and they go up into battle. Ahab disguises himself, but he's shot by a freak arrow shot and dies in the battle. Jehoshaphat goes back home to lick his wounds. And then he's scolded by a prophet for helping a wicked ruler. We'll read about that in just a little bit. But that wasn't the end of Jehoshaphat's troubles. Later on, because he is still allied by marriage to the house of Ahab, he helps later on the son of Ahab, Ahaziah. And he joins with him in a shipbuilding business. But those ships are destroyed because God doesn't want the king of Judah allied with an idolatrous king, the king of Israel. So he pays a high price, Jehoshaphat does, for listening to wrong advice and for helping the wrong people. Now I want to submit to you that sometimes we're like Jehoshaphat. We want good advice, right? That's why we ask people for it. But sometimes we end up listening to somebody else, to something that we know is wrong. It doesn't sound right to us. We want good advice, but sometimes it's what we want to hear instead of what we need to hear. And sometimes it's just because of our own bad choice of friends. We consider maybe that because they're our friends, they're gonna really want the best for us, and so they're gonna be truthful with us. But all too often, sometimes our friends are just like the prophets that Ahab called together. Yes, men who tell us what we want to hear instead of what we need to hear. But the truth is, it's not just our friends or the people that we place around us. The problem is really ourselves, because we have the power to make sure that the advice we get and the friends we help and let help us are godly people and have our spiritual good in mind all the time. See, we all fight these battles against ourselves. In Romans chapter 7, we won't turn there, but you can take a look at that when you get the opportunity. In Romans chapter 7 and verses 15 towards the end of the chapter, Paul talks about the battle that he fought within himself. He says, I want to do good, but I find that sin is still present within me. No matter how good I want to do, I keep fighting this battle. In Galatians chapter 5, he puts it this way. He says, the spirit fights against the flesh, and the flesh against the spirit. And they're always butting heads with one another so that you may not do the things that you really want to do. Now, you and I really want to please the Lord. That's why we're here tonight, right? But yet sometimes we find ourselves stumbling. We find ourselves in a spot simply because we listened to the wrong people or we got involved with the wrong people. So what can we do so that we don't end up in the same trouble that Jehoshaphat did? I'm going to suggest to you two simple things, and I've already mentioned them, but we're going to take a deeper look at them. The first thing is simply to be careful who you hear. Look again at verses 6 and 7 of 2 Chronicles chapter 18. Jehoshaphat, after listening to these 400 prophets, false prophets, says, isn't there a prophet of Yahweh, a prophet of the Lord? He knows that these guys are not speaking for the God of heaven. And, of course, Ahab says, well, there is one, but I hate him because he never says anything that I want to hear. Now, that doesn't mean that Micaiah didn't speak the truth, but Ahab wasn't interested in the truth. Ahab thought he had a better idea. I've got all these prophets. I've got these prophets who will tell us what we want to hear. I want to go up and I want to fight against the Arameans at Ramoth-Gilead. So they'll tell me what I want to hear so that I can do that. Sometimes we find ourselves in the same spot. We think we have a better idea than God. And we see that happening across the religious world. And sometimes we see it happening in our own lives. We know what God says about something. And yet what we really want when we fish for other advice is for somebody just to tell us what we want to hear. For somebody to tell us that it's okay to do what we want no matter what God says about it. We want validation for that, just as Ahab wanted validation from all these 400 prophets. Now for sure God has been around a lot longer than we have. He's seen a lot more than we have. And he's already thought of the situation that you find yourself in where you think you know better than he does. 1 Corinthians 15:33 is absolutely true. Do not be deceived. Bad company corrupts good morals. And we tell our kids that all the time, don't we? We want to make sure that our children choose good friends. But how much more do we need this advice for ourselves? Paul didn't tell this to children. He wrote it to adults. He wrote it to adults who were getting bad advice from themselves. Bad company does corrupt good morals. because it takes those good morals and it disregards them. Proverbs 13 verse 20 says this, "He who walks with wise men will be wise, but the companion of fools will suffer harm." Why is the second part of that so applicable to this lesson today? It's easy, you can see that. It's because those who walk with fools are going to do what the fools do. It's easy to fall into the habits of those who are around you. And I bet that a lot of us can count as friends those who are not members of the Lord's church, those who don't really have spiritual interests in mind. Doesn't mean that they're decent people, maybe even moral people. But they don't want the same things that you do. They don't have the same agenda that you do. They don't have the same perspective or perception or worldview that you do. Leave your marker in 2 Chronicles and go with me to 2 Corinthians. 2 Corinthians chapter 6. In 2 Corinthians chapter 6, Paul tells this problem-riddled church that they need to choose their companions more wisely. In 2 Corinthians 6 and in verse 14, Paul says, "Do not be bound together with unbelievers. For what partnership have righteousness and lawlessness? Or what fellowship has light with darkness? Or what harmony has Christ with Belial? Or what has a believer in common with an unbeliever? Or what agreement has the temple of God with idols? For we are the temple of the living God. Just as God said, I will dwell in them and walk among them. I will be their God and they shall be my people. Therefore, come out from their midst and be separate, says the Lord. And do not touch what is unclean and I will welcome you. I will be a father to you and you will be sons and daughters to me, says the Lord Almighty. Therefore, having these promises, beloved, let us cleanse ourselves from all defilement of flesh and spirit, perfecting holiness in the fear of God." Now look at verse 1 of chapter 7. When he says, let's cleanse ourselves from the defilements of the flesh, what does he mean exactly? Now we can make a broad application of that and say, well, he's saying we shouldn't sin, right? We shouldn't get involved in activities that are unwholesome or sinful, and you would be right. But contextually, he's talking about getting involved with people who have a different agenda than you do, who don't appreciate spirituality, who don't worship and serve the same God that you do. What advice do you think you would get from someone who is not a Christian on a variety of subjects? What advice do you think you would get from someone when you ask them about, oh, let's say, premarital sex? What do you think someone who is not a Christian, what's the advice they would give you for that? You can guess. What about if you ask them about authority in religion? Someone who's not a Christian. If you ask them about whether or not we need authority for all we do in religious things, what do you think they would tell you? What if you ask them about life questions or love or one of 100 different subjects? What would a non-Christian give you advice about concerning those things? And how would it be different if you asked a Christian advice on those things? Somebody who knew their Bible, who knew what God's will was on all these different perspectives and avenues of life. You see, non-Christians have a different agenda. They think differently than you do. And if you're not careful, they can talk you into doing something that you know better about. And I bet it's happened to you. You've asked the advice of someone whom you know, whom you respect, whom you love and admire. But they have no spirituality. They have no concern for eternity. And they give you their advice. And it sounds good to you. It sounds reasonable to you. Or maybe it validates something that you were already leaning towards anyway. But yet your conscience is tugging at you. You know what that conscience is? It's this. Your conscience will only be as strong as what you fill it with. Your conscience sometimes is this book trying to tell you what you should know better about. And yet if you listen to someone who doesn't know this book and they give you conflicting advice that sounds good to you, Well, sometimes you might end up falling for that. That's why it's so important for us to be familiar with God's Word, so that you know that no matter what happens in any situation, you know what your response is going to be. Sometimes, as we said this morning, God's commands are uncomfortable. God's commands are not like the worldly wisdom that prevails all around us. And sometimes following God's way is difficult. It's hard to take sometimes, but His way is always right and always, always in your best interests. So be careful who you hear. Second, go back with me to 2 Chronicles, this time chapter 19. 2 Chronicles chapter 19. We said we should be careful who you hear, but we should also be careful who you help. Remember, Jehoshaphat had gone to help Ahab, a wicked man if there ever was one. And they were defeated in battle. Jehoshaphat returns, verse 1 says, in safety to his house in Jerusalem. He's gone back to lick his wounds. He's lost the battle. He helped the wrong person. And look at verse 2. Jehu, the son of Hanani, the seer, went out to meet him and said to King Jehoshaphat, should you help the wicked and love those who hate the Lord, and so bring wrath on yourself from the Lord? He just asked him a question. Who do you think you are, helping those who have set themselves against God? I bet that was a point well taken. Maybe even if only for a short while for Jehoshaphat. But these decisions that Jehoshaphat was making was because of his bad alliances. He married, after all, Athaliah, the daughter of Ahab and Jezebel. Later on, Athaliah would try to usurp the kingdom of Judah by having all the royal offspring killed. She would be just as bloody ruthless as any one of the contemporary kings of that time. So he's getting bad advice from his wife, from his father-in-law. Later on, he would get bad advice from his brother-in-law, King Ahaziah, who takes over the throne after King Ahab dies. The problem is with all of this is that Jehoshaphat was seeking human allies instead of seeking help from God. And we don't have time to do it, but when you look at some of the defeats that Israel suffered in battle, especially the southern kingdom, when they suffered defeat in battle, it was because they sought help from Egypt or from the Syrians or from some other country instead of help from God. And this is the problem with Jehoshaphat. He's looking for a human ally. He's looking for human strength. But there is no strength in humanity like that of God's. Helping out the wicked is just as bad as taking their advice. It's no good for them and it's no good for you. The New Testament tells us in Romans 1 verse 32, though they know the ordinance of God, that those who practice such things are worthy of death, they not only do the same, but also give hearty approval to those who practice them. Now you go back to Romans chapter 1, and we won't do it now, but the context of that chapter is about homosexuality, about how even back then, homosexuality was rampant, and it was part of a whole bunch of different sins. And Paul's point is that maybe you don't involve yourself in it, maybe you're not this kind of person yourself, but you approve of them, you condone them, you tolerate them, and Paul says that's just as bad as being a part of what they're doing. And so it's important for us, especially now when we see this LGBTQ craze just running rampant through our society, through our culture, through our country, expecting us to just blandly accept it. Not just accept it, but embrace it. Paul's words mean just as much to us today as they did to the people that he first wrote to. Don't give your hearty approval to it. Don't let them think that you in any way condone it. It doesn't mean that you have to be ugly to them or that you have to be insulting or in some kind of way derogatory to them. But you certainly don't have to take what they're trying to jab down your throat. You can understand that in some things there can be no partnership. There can be no alliance. In 2 John, in verses 9 through 11, John says, anyone who goes too far and does not abide in the teaching of Christ does not have God. We can stop there, and we can talk about that for a long time. Two different kinds of people. The same two different kinds of people that we saw back in 2 Corinthians chapter 6, remember? He says, the one who abides in the teaching, he has both the Father and the Son. And if anyone comes to you and does not bring this teaching, do not receive him into your house and do not give him a greeting, for the one who gives him a greeting participates in his evil deeds. What he means by giving him a greeting is letting him think that you condone or tolerate or accept in any way the falsehood that he propagates. He says, number one, the problem is they're not of God because they don't have him. They don't abide in the teaching. They have disregarded this book. And so because of that, they don't know what they're talking about. And not only that, but they're involved in the mission of spreading their falsehood. So he says, don't even let them into your house. Don't give them any reason to think that you condone what it is they're teaching. Instead, what we ought to do, Paul tells us, is to show them what's right, to show them how we stand against error, whether it's error in activity or error in teaching. Go with me to Ephesians chapter 5 for a moment. Ephesians 5. In Ephesians 5, look with me, beginning in verse 5. Paul says, this you know with certainty, that no immoral or impure person or covetous man who is an idolater has an inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God. So he sets off this section by letting them know that there are some people who just aren't going to be saved. And the reason is because of the decision that they've made for themselves. And then he says, let no one deceive you with empty words, for because of these things, the wrath of God comes upon the sons of disobedience. Therefore, do not be partakers with them. For you formerly were darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. Look at verse 10. Trying to learn what is pleasing to the Lord. Do not participate in the unfruitful deeds of darkness, but instead even expose them. For it is disgraceful even to speak of the things which are done by them in secret. I want you to just notice real quickly two important words here. In verse 7, he says, do not be partakers with them. In verse 11, he says, do not participate with them. Those two words, partakers and participate, come from the same Greek word that is sometimes translated fellowship. Now, you and I consider fellowship to be a very deeply significant thing, right? It's meaningful to us. It means that we share in these holy, sacred things. We share in the work of the Lord together. That's a deeply significant thing. And Paul says, don't have fellowship, don't be sharers with people who have absolutely no fellowship with God. In fact, he says, don't participate in their unfruitful deeds, but expose them. Now that takes guts. That takes a whole level of courage that sometimes we're not willing to step up to. And you might be the only one who's willing to step up to that. Is that scary? You bet it is. That's why you have to be convinced of God's word first. If we're going to be careful who we hear and who we help, then we've got to fight and win the battle with ourselves because we have the power to make these choices. I'm going to go back to one more passage, back in 2 Chronicles. 2 Chronicles, this time in chapter 20. 2 Chronicles, chapter 20. Notice verse 35, as if getting involved with Ahab's daughter wasn't bad enough, as if listening to Ahab's bad advice wasn't bad enough, verse 35 of 2 Chronicles 20 says that after this, Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, allied himself with Ahaziah, king of Israel. Who was Ahaziah? Ahab's son. And he acted wickedly. In so doing, so he allied himself with him to make ships to go to Tarshish. And they made the ships in Ezion-Geber. Then Eliezer, the son of Dodavahu of Mereshah, prophesied against Jehoshaphat, saying, because you have allied yourself with Ahaziah, the Lord has destroyed your works. And so the ships were broken and could not go to Tarshish. Now I'm going to say, first of all, that Jehoshaphat was a hard-headed guy. He didn't learn the lessons that he should have learned. But sometimes we can be just as hard-headed. Sometimes we can be hard-headed when we fail to fight and win the battle against ourselves. Jehoshaphat found out the hard way that going against God only brings ruin. His ships were junk. Now, God may not break the things in your life. He may allow you to go on your merry way because those are the choices that you have made. It's the advice that you've listened to. God will allow you to do what you want because he has placed in you free will. But know this, that in the end, judgment comes. And we're going to be accountable to God for every decision, every person that we've heard, every choice that we've made. That's why one more passage is so important. 2 Timothy chapter 2, go there with me. 2 Timothy chapter 2, we'll end the lesson on this passage. 2 Timothy 2 and in verse 19. Nevertheless, the firm foundation of God stands, having this seal. The Lord knows those who are his, and everyone who names the name of the Lord is to abstain from wickedness. If we could just get that passage down into our hearts, into our very souls, we won't have to wrestle with ourselves quite as much. And maybe our decisions will become wiser. We're going to stand in a moment and sing a song. And I hope that you will consider the battle that's going on within you at this time. Maybe you're being urged by your conscience to do what you know is right and you haven't done it yet. If you're not a Christian, you need to be. It's plain and simple. In the end, God will break your ships. And it won't be fun. It'll be eternally, eternally painful. And if you have become a Christian and you're still fighting this battle, well, you can join the club because every one of us struggles with something in our lives. But it doesn't mean that we have to let our wicked inclinations win. We can let God guide us. We can let him lead us home. And if there's a way that we can help you tonight, we want to. Come now, please, while we stand and sing.